Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program here on April 11, 2013. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, coming to you live as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Tonight we have our special guest, Ann Wilkinson, owner of Hands-On Health and Amoga Life. We're going to talk a little bit about how and why we have gone from alternative to complementary to integrated healing. Let me explain. In the 1990s, consumers spent more for alternative healing than for all other methods of healing combined. Alternative healing is when someone goes outside of the mainstream methods of healthcare in order to seek care that is not considered part of our culture and methods. This had led to so many discoveries of effective methods that this led to the next step, where more and more people who were still with traditional methods of healing supplemented their care with alternative as well. This became complementary healing when a person was using both traditional and alternative. This proved more successful, more discoveries and results, and it brought us to where we are now, integrated healing, where many of the mainstream practices have brought in that which was considered esoteric or foreign or what have you in order to enhance and supplement the care that they give. Our guest Ann Wilkinson knows about this because she practices osteopathy, myofascial release, and cranial sacral therapy. She teaches courses to healing practitioners for continuing education credits and life enhancement skills at her biodynamic farm in Landenburg, Pennsylvania. She's a world-renowned healer and a writer specializing in the treatment of chronic pain. She will send energy spiraling into and out of your body in ways you may have never experienced. And says, I see the light in the structure of space, and I pull it into the body so that it can heal itself. Everything is love and light. You can find Ann's sites at handsonhealthde.com and at amogalife.com. So here to help take us out of our 19th and 20th century methods of thinking, of putting everything into categories and boxes and seeing everything as separate unto itself, into a more holistic quantum state of mind, of understanding the mind, the heart, the body, and the spirit, all working together as all spokes lead to the center of the wheel, is tonight's guest, Ann Wilkinson. Ann, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Ann, thank you so much for joining us. I think this is a very important subject for people to understand in the cycles of change, because this is a world movement and you appear to be one of its leaders. Can you tell us a little bit about Hands-On Health and Amoga Life?
Well, first of all, bless you and thank you for that introduction. It was quite wonderful. And Hands-On Health started out with a specialty in myofascial release and created a little niche for people who just were not responding to the ultrasound, electrical stim, moving from one weightlifting machine to another. They just didn't seem to fit into any kind of protocolish special, like when the medicine gets specialized and segmented. They just wouldn't fit. And so they'd be labeled, you know, emotional patients, non-compliant, you know, difficult. And somehow they would end up in my office. And I could follow the emotional overlays and just find the blockages, the places that were keeping them in suffering. And it just got to the point where when someone was very difficult, they refused to take medications, they refused injections and surgery, that the doctors, or if they were really spiritual, because sometimes that scared, you know, the doctors and the PTs, and they would say, you need to go and see Ann Wilkinson.
You became the mission impossible, as it were, for
I
many cases.
I've been called that before. You are Sherlock Holmes of Sherlock Holmes of chronic pain, yes.
Yes. My goodness. And now, when What was lacking in the what was strictly traditional practices that you were able to reach in that person in order to find a niche that might bring them something that wasn't there before?
Well, you know, David, it's funny. I put myself through physical therapy school. And I worked 3 jobs while I took 18 credits. And when I came out of school and I saw what they were doing in the clinics, I said, oh, no. Oh, absolutely. I did not work this hard to come out and be a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
I will not do things that I could train a 5-year-old child to do. Like anyone can smear ultrasound gel in circles. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I refuse. I just couldn't do it. And I think sometimes if you're born with some kind of a gift or it just seems that if you don't resist, the path just flows open. And it seemed if I wanted to turn in any other direction, I was blocked. But for some reason, from the time I took my very first course, I took it with the world leaders, not their students that were teaching, but the ones who actually created the techniques. Robin McKenzie, he created the back extension. And what happened is these therapists that would come from other countries, they would kind of laugh at us and they would make fun. And sometimes anger can serve you. And so I would get a little angry and I'd say, they're not going to make fun of me. I've worked too hard to get to here. And I would listen to every word they said. And as a matter of fact, just by strange chance, with almost every leader that I studied with, somehow I either knew a TA or somehow I would get to have dinner with them and I would learn more in those times than I would in the class. I mean, it was truly little miracles that happened. Like Janet Travell was the doctor for President Kennedy, and she was the biggest world leader in fascial discovery. Mm-hmm. And I got to work with her before she died at the ripe age of 90, one-on-one. I worked with Freddie Carlton one, John Barnes extensively. Learning from the leaders, not only, you know, with that knowledge base and that wisdom, but they have also an artistic aspect to the way in which they treat. And I do have to tell you, I think that made a big difference. And European techniques were quite different than the American techniques. And like I said, McKenzie came in and said, oh, my God, the physical therapist, you're causing people to have surgery. You're telling them to bring their knees to their chest. And you're supposed to be doing extension. And do you know that was 30 years ago that I took that class? And I think that most of the physical therapists were still using flexion until maybe the last decade, more seriously in the last 5 years. I mean, I learned how to mobilize total knee replacements with no pain during their recovery. And do you know still today that they barbarically crank on the knees? The patients are on extensive pain medications with tears pouring down their face. And I learned that technique 27 years ago, and that it's still not filtrated throughout as a common practice in physical therapy.
Yes.
So, yeah, and you know what else was fun? Robin McKenzie, he was mentioning yoga, but he was mentioning it under his breath. And that gave me a hint. And he mentioned it 3 or 4 times, but he said it very, like, subtly. Mm-hmm. Because back then, yoga was a bad word. But I thought, if he keeps mentioning it, and the way he would kind of mention it under his breath, it actually intrigued me even more. So I studied yoga, you know, 28 years ago, 30 years ago, and was prescribing it to my patients. Yes. As a treatment modality, and it got me into a little trouble in the beginning. I had to pull down my yoga posters because it was seen as kind of like an anti-Christ movement or something back then. Believe it or not, I guess I'm dating myself, but it's true. It's really come around and come into the forefront and created a lot of healing opportunities for people.
Absolutely, absolutely, and this is what I think is a reflection of the cycles of change. I've been telling our listeners that the entire machine age was a result of a physical high cycle in the world where might makes right, and we would, you know, attempt to use force for things. While at the same time, what I call the emotional cycle of the world and the intellectual cycle of the world were low. We were coming out of a low Victorian era of the late 19th century, and the intellectual low at the time with a physical high cycle of the time, and we outbuilt our own sense. This was not only true in the mechanized world and in industry, but in health practices, until we get to the complaints, the likes of which you've mentioned. People are being given forceful methods of recovery, that we're not being sensitive to the warning signs of pain. And one of the most common complaints I get of 20th century practices is that tradition would treat the symptoms and not the cause. How can you treat a cause if you don't see it? Another old expression is this one, to see one, and only when you become emotionally aware and develop the emotional intelligence and sensitivity to your own feeling within your own integrated mind, heart, and body, can you recognize the ways to reach your patient. And so here we are, moving forward, upwards still, with a long way to go, but then it's a long trend we're rising on, finding smarter and more sensitive ways as the intellectual and emotional cycles of the world rise, and less forceful ways as the physical cycle of the world declines, to treat the methods and the ailments of others. And this is something that seems to be a second nature for you, Anne.
Well, let's take this one step further, a comment that you just made. You know, it is very important for a therapist to be sensitive. And what's happened, particularly in the physical therapy world, is that we've, you know, now required that a physical therapist has a doctorate. And what happens is you become very adept at research. But when it comes to people skills, they don't tend to really work those well. And besides that, if you are not healed as a practitioner, you cannot heal a patient. And you were saying something earlier about, you know, that we're, it's a progression. But in some ways, we are actually taking off layers of things that did not work. We're pulling back techniques that are 7,000, 5,000, and 3,000 years old. Because we found out that, like, the 200-year-old techniques to reach for the stars and never look at the forest and the trees, like, that we kind of overshot. And I feel like physical therapy kind of did that. And we kind of overshot. We got very heady. And we lost that sensitivity. And lately, I have been studying much more energetic techniques, which actually you could trace back to Atlantean times. You know, we're talking about a lot of my techniques that are osteopathic, we're going back a few hundred years. You know, the yoga, you're going back a few thousand years. The energetic work, you're going back even more thousands of years.
Yes.
And so in some ways, we're actually debunking, defragging, taking away the layers of chrome and glitter and nonsense, and we're getting back to the roots and the real deal. Now, the problem is 84% of our gross national product is that high-tech, really kind of the overshooting, causing even probably more injury, not thinking out what are the repercussions of using radiation, of using medication. I mean, my patients, they take medication, they use a tiny percentage of it, their body uses a little bit of it, it excretes a little more, and then the things that make the medicine patentable store in their tissues. It gives them diseases like lupus. Diets are terrible. Gluten, sugar are causing major problems, the preservatives, and so I can tell when I touch a patient by their skin whether they are really caring for themselves, if there's purity in them, in their diet, and even in their thoughts, patients' thought processes. When I teach a patient from an osteopathic technique, you know, perspective, God and nature are huge in that wheel, that component, that pie. The person is like a whole pie, and the slices are not only their diet, it's how in contact they are with nature, how in contact they are with their spiritual being, what their thought processes are, what kind of exercise they do. I go through all of this with my patients because you'll see patterns. You'll see patterns that come from their parents, their grandparents. I treated a little girl once, really limping very badly, and she was having pain in her back. No one could figure out what it was. And I mean, she was a little girl, maybe six.
Yes.
And then one day I just said to her, like, actually, why are you limping? And it comes to find out that her grandfather had a total knee replacement that had failed, and he was limping, and she was imitating him, and then the limp was creating the back pain.
Good Lord.
And the thing is, as a therapist, if you will not take the time to go back and unravel all the way down to the feet, the patient might come in with a headache or jaw pain. And if you don't go all the way down to the pelvis, to the knee, to the ankle, to the foot, and make sure that they are being supported from the ground up. So they may have had an injury in high school to the ankle, which is causing a collapse of the pelvis, which is causing a compensation of the neck.
Yes.
Creating a headache. And I'm going to tell you right now, you have to fight the insurance companies in order to be able to treat correctly today. Because they will do things like this. If I have a carpal tunnel patient, I'm told by the insurance company that I'm only allowed to treat them from the elbow down. So I may do that for entertainment purposes for two or three treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go up to the neck, or it might even be a lung. It might even be pneumonia from childhood and scar tissue in the rib cage that is causing, it only takes a weight of a hair of a fascial restriction to cause problems with a nerve.
Hmm.
So I will follow it and trace it all the way back. And the patient will come in and say they had complete relief. If I document it, I will not be paid for the treatment. So what's
everything
happening
got today? Specialized. Yes.
Let me tell you, here's how crazy it is. Let's say if 30, you know, 50 years from now, I'm not on the planet. But someone says, wow, Ann Wilkinson, she had such good results with carpal tunnel. Let's go back and read her notes and her things and see what was it about her. You know, what brilliance did she know about carpal tunnel? Do you know that they won't be able to trace that back? Now, when I went to PT school, it was drilled into us that you cross every T, you dot every I. But do you know now if you actually do that, you will be reprimanded by not being paid for your treatment?
Yes.
Even if you prove that your treatment. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I'm the one who spent 12 years in postgraduate from high school work, and I've got a clerk who I'm not sure even maybe graduated from high school, but probably didn't go to college, who's going to tell me how to treat my patient. And it's a huge frustration today in the medical field.
It has a long way to go, and we have to become more and more holistic. It was really a consumer-driven market that we started looking for the alternatives, and the traditional methods of healing in this country and in the West per se were quite reluctant to it at first. But because of a grassroots movement, we started going there. But then those who are advanced in the field, such as you, Ann, you have to work with the people, do you not, to understand a little bit about themselves a little bit more, or sometimes you have to understand more that they do themselves. Now, I'm going to give a parallel here, psychology versus physical health. There's a case of a woman who wouldn't agree with her husband to put a garbage disposal in their home, but she didn't know why. Well, he said it would be more practical, it would help you in the kitchen, and you peel things and you can get rid of them easily, and it's quite practical. And she said, no, I can't have it. Well, they got to talking a little bit, found out that there was, based on an archaic feeling, because she was raised on a farm. And when you're raised on a farm, you never throw anything away. You don't waste anything. If you have peels, corn cobs, even eggshells, whatnot, you give it to the hogs, and that becomes food. Or you use it as compost and fertilizer, and everything is recycled. It's organic. And then when she saw something being wasted, and as soon as she resolved that and realized that it wasn't going to be put to good use anyway, because now she's living in an urban environment, she said, I got it. Yeah, of course we can have a garbage disposal. No problem. Well, sometimes it's not just we're not talking about appliance or something that's psychological. We're talking about the body. You mentioned the archaic situation, not archaic, the historic case of the young girl who was imitating the walk of her father, and that led to problems, you know, because of residuals of walking in her body. And you were able to go into her past to find that out. Instead of looking in the here and now, the contemporaneous can have a history, so we have to look across time, and we have to look beyond the part of the body that's affected, because everything is holistic. Would you say that's true?
If not, you will fail.
Yes.
If you don't do that, there will not be success. And I do have to tell you, I think that this movement came about from experience and education. There was a time period in the 1940s when people would not go to hospitals and doctors because they knew they would die. Mm. It really got to that point. And health insurance was created to put life back into that system so that people would think they were getting something for free and go for that and return back to the doctors and hospitals. But during that period where there was fear of dying when you went into the hospital, which actually is revisiting again today, people really used osteopathy and homeopathics and, natural remedies for healing. And then they kind of got off track again. They, had a carrot dangled and bit it. But right now, Dr. Oz did a show recently. I don't watch TV. I live on a farm also. And he said that 1 out of 3 people who go into the hospital die. Second out of the third contract a disease that is causing them more problems than when they came in with, and only 1 out of 3 actually gets a favorable result. So he's recommending that you don't go to the hospital, which I can't say that I don't agree. I personally don't like to go into them myself. But I can tell you I worked in hospitals when I first came out of school. I worked in a hospital. Mm-hmm. And it was nice because you got to look at the charts and you got to look at people's social history. And I happened to be in a rural place, but the hospital was in the city part, and then there was a huge rural area around it. And very quickly, and I thank God that I learned this lesson very early in my life, when I looked at people's charts, they either lived in town, hung out at the corner bar, had many, many doctor visits and hospital visits, and they looked 80, but they were only 50. The people who lived out in the country never came into the hospital, not even to have babies. Mm-hmm. They didn't really drink or smoke, probably because they were so busy. I know on my farm, I wake up in the morning and I go to bed. I don't watch TV. I don't drink beer. I don't have time to do those things. I'm doing things I think that are a lot more fun on a farm. And they looked like they were 50 and they were 80. And it might have been their first visit to the hospital, but you had 8 children and this is your first visit to the hospital. But let me tell you something. It was so consistent. The message was so loud and clear that if you really have that kind of nature-deprived life and that you do not take care of yourself, you are going to age quickly. And once you really get into the medical system, if that's where you put your power and your faith, you become the million-dollar man or woman for that system. But if you refuse to get involved with that and you really take it, like my health insurance is working out at the Y, doing cardio, doing my yoga, eating my drinking my green drink every morning, which, hey, I've had my share of, I have great eggs here. I loved bacon. I loved, pancakes and oatmeal and all these things for breakfast. But once I started drinking that green drink, mm-hmm. It's got celery and cucumber and cilantro and apple and lemon and kale. I get up in the morning and that is all I want. And I get this great energy from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the afternoon I eat some chia seeds mixed with buckwheat and hemp seeds and some cranberry and cherry with some sunflower milk. And again, I get another boost. And people will say to me, for your age, where do you get so much energy? And then I'll treat patients, and then I have a break, and I'll get on a horse. And meanwhile, I've gotten up early and gone jogging and done yoga and meditated. And it's really a shift in your consciousness, in your perspective, and it's really about education. And because much of it, there I was being educated by my patients' charts. Then I got educated when I went to India. I got educated when I went to Israel. And I've been working with an organization called Humanity and Unity, working with a woman named Her Holiness Sai Ma, who invites medical professionals in from all over the world that are on the top shelf of holistic, and I've got to learn from them over the last 18 years. I've just been so blessed and so fortunate that the people that I've worked with, and that I'm like a sponge, and that I've absorbed, and then had a huge patient load to repeat it to so that I get to learn it back again. And they repeat it back to me when I forget sometimes.
Yeah.
Like if they see me getting upset about something, they'll go, beloved light, remember, you're love and light. And I laugh so hard, and I'll de-stress. It usually has something to do with an insurance company or maybe a litigation or something, you know, and I'll come in, I can't believe I have to write these notes over again, you know, whatever. And they'll say, now remember, no matter what, you're love and light. And it'll make me laugh. And then I know that they're getting it, and they keep me on track. And, you know, it's really beautiful. But Saimal has taught me a lot about our thought processes.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can change your chemistry, your pH of your body and your chemistry by your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And also that whenever I touch a patient, to have deep gratitude and to just pour love into them. And I'm going to tell you, my treatments lately, it seems like I've taken these three extensive classes with her in the last, say, year and a half called Transformational Healing.
Yes.
And patients that I would think when they came in and the symptoms that they're describing to me, I'm thinking, I'm not really quite sure what I'm going to do with you, and I think you'll be coming for 6 months. Do you know that sometimes it's even one, two, or three treatments, and they're done?
Hmm.
And I'm telling you, love will exponentially, if you can be in a practice where you aren't seeing 52 patients a day, and it's all about how much you can bill, and if the paperwork's done, and you haven't drank coffee for breakfast, and you're, you know, wound for sound, if you can check out of that model of medicine, and you can be in a model where meditation, yoga, that I purposely schedule patients who I know don't eat breakfast or eat bad food in the morning mm-hmm. while I'm making my green drink. And I'll let them watch me. I'll say, come in the kitchen, and I'll have them watch me. And then I'll mm-hmm. say, would you like a taste? And they'll be like, I don't know, it's green. You know, and I'll, you know, just a little taste and see what you think of it, you know. And then, you know, I'll work with them that way. I won't necessarily lecture them, or I don't really want my patients to be poly purebred. You know, we want to have some fun in life.
Yeah.
But I ask them to pick their poisons wisely. You know, I always tell them, cheat twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and really go for it. Make it good. Don't eat a Three Musketeers bar. Eat a Fauchon, you know. Go for it. But, you know, really do take good care of yourself otherwise. And then I teach them how their pancreas works.
Yeah.
And how the sugar spikes, and how if you eat a sugar meal, even the next meal, if you eat all greens, the pancreas is going to treat it as though it was sugar. And when I really teach people why, they get it.
Yeah.
So you really have to slow it down. You have to educate and cultivate. Like, you have to find out what makes people tick and what motivates them. And then you get transformation. And it's beautiful.
Yes. Yes, and we've gone so far into these new methods, which are now becoming more integrated, that we've gone as far as beginning to catch up with the past. These things that we're returning to have been around and were the way for so many of us, well, literally for centuries. Then came the machine age, the overprocessed foods, the overbleached flour, the preservatives, the additives, the mass production. You don't eat what's grown locally. Macrobiotic diets, for instance, you would eat, you know, the honey from the bees in your area that would give you immunities to certain things in your area, because being localized and being naturalized is what our bodies have always been acclimated to. That's how they evolved, and we've done a bit of a mechanized aberration. You mentioned that sometimes your people would get it, and, you know, your clients would get it. And hopefully traditional medicine is getting it, in addition to some of the many miracles that they've worked as well. Let's be fair about that. But the Tao was once described as, it's something that you have to get. And it's like getting a joke. Getting the Tao, understanding the Tao is like getting a joke. You either get it or you don't. When you start becoming sensitive to yourself emotionally, and you start becoming more intellectually aware, then you can get the things that are going on, read the signals, and have, you know, the feedback loops working with your mind and decision-making process, instead of repressing the signals of your body as quickly and as easily as you repress the emotions within yourself. In the past two centuries we've come out of, take men, for instance, had two emotions, anger and alcohol. And while I'm being a bit general and everything like that, women were repressed and, you know, subjugated. and often afraid to express, and they would have to internalize their emotions and feel isolated. Well, we're coming far out of that, and there's a resurgence all over the world. There's an Arab Spring that's ending gender slavery. There's an awareness that's happening everywhere. Deepak Chopra believes that we're moving out of the paradigm of survival of the fittest to survival of the wisest. And in the process of that, it's not just gathering data and information, but understanding how to use knowledge, and that is wisdom. And that seems to be moving more into the healing tradition, and the fact that it's being driven by a grassroots demand for it means that all boats are rising with this tide. It is, in fact, a world movement and a world rise in consciousness. Do you think that may be so, Anne?
Well, you know, don't get me wrong. Technology certainly has its place.
Yes.
One of the problems is that we haven't thought out some of the ramifications of some of it, like the half-lives of some, you know, products. And you know, I get patients with really strange symptoms, and a lot of times I can trace it back to something they cleaned their house with or the fact that their house was exterminated, and sometimes it's Bell's palsy, and they have tics and twitches and, you know, neurological things. It's like high technology is fantastic, but it really much of it should have been thought out more before it was so-called gifted to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the same time, one of my biggest passions is the fascial system, and that's what osteopathy works on. And the electron microscope discovered that there's microtubules of light in the fascia.
Hmm.
And it fascinates me for so many reasons. So the high technology certainly can heighten our awareness and can increase our education. And so that's fantastic. But we cannot, you know, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. These old traditions that people poo-pooed, you know, oh, grandmother did that. Wasn't that silly? She'd go out in the yard and pick this leaf and put it on your leg and then the bleeding would stop. Well, it worked. And it's why we're still on the planet as human beings. So we don't want to throw those old traditions away.
No.
But at the same time, I think we've been awfully hasty in the way that we have progressed and in using some of this high tech that we find out later actually caused more damage than it helped. That maybe if it was presented more thoughtfully, we would have found a way to harness the good aspect without unleashing, you know, the harmful effects. But the fascial system is one thing that we've been able to quantify and identify more in the last decade, where surgeons and physical therapists would kind of think of it as tissue that was kind of in the way. For people, lay people who don't know what fascia is, if you see a rump roast or something, a piece of meat, there's a tissue on it that's not skin, that kind of you have to pull away from that muscle belly, the part that you would actually eat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our body is lined like an entire body stocking with this particular tissue. And that tissue is not only in the form of our full body, but then it wraps around groups of muscles, and then muscles within the groups, and then the fibers within a muscle, and then the cells within the muscle fiber.
Hmm.
And then the little contents within the cell, and it goes into infinity in the direction of matter in our physical body. But
yeah.
The fact that it has light in it indicates that it also is capable of that transmission that light can do in infinity in the other realms that we don't see, you know, faster than the speed of light. And it makes a lot of explanation as to why you can put a homeopathic remedy on the tongue and stop bleeding in the toe, or why you can use an acupuncture needle on, you know, the outer leg and affect the liver. And so that, with osteopathy in that respect, when I actually do my treatment, I'm working on the fascia. Now, what's kind of interesting is that emotional and psychological issues will come up. If I find a trigger point on someone, they will remember an injury. Like, they might come into me for a headache, and I'll say, you know, it's kind of weird. Around your sacrum, there, I'm feeling a lot of fascial restriction. Have you ever fallen on your buttocks? And they might say, nah. And then I'll work on them, and then that night they'll have a dream, or they'll remember, oh, my gosh, when I was a little girl, you know, I fell off a swing, or someone pulled a seat out from under me, or, you know, I fell off a horse, and I came down on my tailbone really bad. It was actually sore for 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, we may trace that the headaches come all the way back from that, but that memory. And then maybe they, as we work on them, they might cry and say, it was my best friend that pulled out the chair, and after that I really didn't trust people. And, like, this whole pattern of behavior that has followed them since childhood, we will find out is stored as energy in the fascial system. And then what we find out, if we really study Einstein and the laws of thermodynamics and you apply them to the body, if you are spending a lot of energy either on the fact that your pelvis is rotated because you fell on your buttocks, or the, or there's memory in the tissue, or there's emotions locked in there, that's energy that could be used on making you walk more efficiently, making your organs function better. Like, there's only so much energy in a system, and you can't take it away and you can't put more in, but it can be overused in certain systems and underdeveloped in other systems. So I'll have patients maybe who come in who analyze and think about everything, and their forehead's all scrunched up, and maybe their feet are numb. And then I've got to work on them, and then we might trace it back to an accident where they thought they died. They came out of their body and could see themselves on the ground, and that maybe they never came all the way in. So here as a PT, I may be doing something like soul retrieval on the table, which someone might call a shamanic, but I'm just telling the person, so if your soul was a shimmery mist, where's yours? And, you know, I have patients who will say at the intersection of such and such, or it's off in the right-hand corner of the room, or it's far, far away. And then when I just tell them to breathe it back in, they'll become pink. When I ask them questions, they'll answer me directly instead of, like, a patient when their soul is not in their body, if you ask them a question, they talk about something else, like you didn't even ask them. Mm. And you almost want to go, hello, is there anybody in there? And when you feel like you want to do that to a patient, if you don't do this kind of it's almost a meditation technique where you pull, you know, you tell them to, to send a cord to the soul and pull, you know, let it come back down in and feel it in every cell of their body. I'm going to tell you, if you don't do that, every treatment, you'll get a headache. You'll be wasting your time. It would be like talking to a doorknob. It would be like treating a doorknob or a wall or a piece of furniture. Yeah. And so you have to go back and use some of these ancient techniques in order to make the things that we're doing in modern time more successful, to be a catalyst. So they work in, they're synergistic. They work together. And you just, like I said, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, education, the high tech is fantastic. It tethers and ties back to the ancient. And together, you know, that marriage of ancient wisdom and modern technology is fantastic. I'm not poo-pooing, you know, one or the other. I'm saying that blend, that yin and yang, the balance, it's absolutely mandatory at this stage, whether it's evolution of us as healers, evolution of us as a species, however you want to tag it or coin it, it's absolutely essential today.
Well, you've illustrated some of the things in understanding how to help someone heal themselves or to understand the condition they're in so that you can get the information that you need to help heal them, which is a parallel to understanding the study of cycles. I've long maintained that we cannot understand our ills of today unless we understand where we're coming from. You know, if anybody ever walks up to you and says, man, you don't know where I'm coming from, listen to that person. Because in this modern age world, we're all thrust in the cities, coming from different places, often different parts of the country, different cultures, different economic groups, and working around centralized, mass-produced production centers, factories, foundries, and living in row homes and not even knowing our neighbor until we've lived there for months or years. And we're just being all thrust together. And we're moving so fast, we confuse being busy with being productive, and we don't really know where we are because we never stop to hear the silence. In order to understand where we are as a people and understand what ills we have in society, we have to understand it in the context of time. Just like a patient who may have a soreness doesn't understand that they fell on their rump when they were a child because they don't stop long enough to reflect back. When you do, you understand the continuums that are going through time, and you understand that that reverberates with cyclical movement. There are rhythms within us and around us that is fundamental in everything in nature. When you start becoming aware and you understand that which is transcendent through time, you understand the rhythms of nature, of individuals, and of the world. You can be sensitive to the things within yourself and understand where you're coming from, where we are, and where we're going, whether it's in healing, whether it's in your business, whether it's in your biorhythms, or whether it's in understanding the nation and the world around you. Because why? If you understand anything, you understand everything. Is it little wonder that Blake spoke of seeing the entire universe in a single grain of sand? This kind of intelligence is moving into the healing industry and is being pioneered by such people as you, Anne. That's why I find what you have to say interesting for our listeners. Where do you see we're going if we were to project ahead? Are we moving more into integrating this type of awareness? I mean, is it becoming successful? And there are a lot of wonderful things in traditional medicine. Ladies and gentlemen, if I were diagnosed with cancer, I would go right away to traditional medicine, but I would also seek to go outside of traditional medicine for a second opinion. But that aside, and where do you see us moving the vector or projection looking ahead for healing for us all?
I'm certain that we're moving to a heightened state of awareness using resonance and vibration. Mm. I would be different than you. If I were to be diagnosed with cancer, the last place I would go is traditional medicine. I would start with looking at what am I harboring as far as resentment or anger? Is there stuff still inside of me, or is there places where the light is not able to move through my body? Is there something from my past, a darkness, that's creating a window for, you know, addictions, or a window for making me vulnerable to certain energies? I would start to look at myself on a cellular vibrational level first. I would then look at what I'm eating. Is my body acid? Is it alkaline? And even knowing that my thought processes can change my pH. Cancer and bacteria love acid bodies. It despises alkaline bodies. Now, I can eat all that. I can go out in my greenhouse and my garden and eat all the healthy food I want. But I'm going to tell you right now, happiness is the key to health. Hmm. You can be happy as can be, smoke cigarettes and drink a pint of vodka at night, be 103 years old and have no teeth, smiling, laughing, and slapping your leg. Or you can be running marathons, eat, you know, drinking green drink, be miserable, you know, and drop dead of a heart attack at 59. You know, I'm going to tell you there's a correlation between happiness and health. That is an absolute fact, and I do believe it's the number one, and I think it's because it changes your pH.
Yes.
And I've had people who, we actually do kind of retreats here on the farm, and there's people who have come and spent anywhere from 2 days to 10 days here. And I am shocked at sometimes the amount of pain that people come here in, and that even before, they might even come early for a few days, and they're not scheduled for treatments yet. Just eating the healthy food, just being around the animals, being around the sunshine, the oxygen, the quiet, the peace and quiet that's here. And you see a transformation in them before I even start doing any work on them. I mean, it's as if the animals are doing work, the trees, the plants. The farm has been biodynamically treated, so there's energetic kind of, you know, things going on here. And
yeah.
It's, you know, when you do biodynamics, it's Rudolf Steiner's work, and you're saying this is a place for, you know, angels and goodness and divas and ascended masters. You can hang out here. We're cultivating this vortex of love and peace, and we cultivate it, and as we cultivate it, it radiates, you know, far from here. And it's interesting because farms that are biodynamically treated, they notice that they don't use as much water, and they don't, and when storms and things come, they don't get, you know, get injured like other places. And I have to tell you, I started treating my farm biodynamically about 3 years after I was here. And we used to always run out of water, and we never run out of water anymore. And I have, you know, the greenhouse now, which uses more water and a way bigger garden. And we used to, and we, when storms, even hurricanes come through here, I pull out my driveway and it looks like I've hit a war zone, but right here on the farm, it's not like that. Hmm. And we used to lose electricity all the time, and we don't. And so when you have experiences like that, it doesn't matter if 50 people said to you, biodynamics is total crap, it's been disproven, or whatever. If you have an experience like that, you just giggle inside because you know. So the same thing with, if you start to change your thought processes and you know that you get healthier, you change your diet and you know it, and, you know, you go to the doctor and say, I did this, this, and this, and this, and they say, that can't happen. Unfortunately, they lose credibility because you know from your experience what happened. So I think what's going to happen in the future is as people become more educated, not just necessarily book smart, but just more willing to go inside of themselves to know that they have fingers and toes, to be aware of what they're breathing, eating, touching, what kind of energy they're putting out, realizing that one individual can resonate and send out and reverberate energy that can change communities, you know, families, communities, countries, and the world. That when people start to realize, when they become responsible as individuals to be examples of good health and good manners and kindness and love, and when they realize that when they hold on to that, they take that responsibility, and they start to recognize that their vibration, their high frequency, keeps them healthy. And other people around them are saying, what are you doing? You're doing something different. You look fantastic. You're getting younger. What are you doing? And then maybe they won't even ask, but they'll start to notice. And this is how the 100th monkey theory, where they had, you know, a group of monkeys in India and a group of monkeys in Africa. One monkey, his potato rolled into the stream. He picked it up and ate it clean without any dirt in it, liked it, started washing his potatoes. The other monkeys watched. They started doing it. All the monkeys in that in African area were doing it. And quite suddenly, all of a sudden, when a certain amount of monkeys were doing it, over in India they started doing it too, and they call it the 100th monkey theory. And it's a change in collective consciousness, and this is where we're going.
Yeah, you know, that's very well put, because there has to be a thread of our consciousness. By the time the 100th monkey learned how to wash the sand off the potato, because one had taught the few taught the more, and so forth, then all the monkeys were doing it on a whole group of islands and more without being taught. And what had happened, evidently, the only explanation for that is that it was in a collective consciousness. Jung spoke of the collective unconscious. Well, there must be a collective conscious too, and that's how we can have a herd mentality, for lack of a better word, and that's why we can have trends. We have economic highs and lows. We either have a high of Beatlemania and the hippie peace freak era, or we're going down low in Generation X, or we're having the Roaring Twenties, or we're in a Great Depression. Why are things moving in tides? Because we're moving collectively. There are tides in the affairs of man, because we are interconnected. And so when we start realizing that we're interconnected to something that's greater and outside of ourselves, we can realize that in the fractal relationship of the universe, all the parts of the self within are interconnected to each other. So it is here, it is elsewhere, I am that, tat vam as see. The macrocosm is the microcosm, as above, so below. And we're living in a holographic universe, and the more we rise in what I believe is a rising tide of emotionalism and a rising tide of intellectualism, giving us a new era of romanticism and a new age of reason, we're going to start healing ourselves, because we're going to conceive of ideas that would have been laughed at 100 years ago. If you want to be healthy, be happy. What? What was that, Bobby McFerrin? Don't worry, be happy.
That was perfectly said. Perfectly said.
Yeah, but it wasn't perfectly sung. All due respect to McFerrin.
Don't worry, be happy. Yeah.
Which is a quote from, I think, Mira, Mirababa, who was silent for 40 years, and then he wrote on chalkboard to one of his sannyasins that he was going to speak. The word got out. Baba's going to speak, Baba's going to speak, and people traveled from all over the world, and they gathered before him. The Baba is going to speak after 40 years. And he got up on stage, and he walked before them, and he said, "Don't worry, be happy." And he walked off. And that was the end of the event.
I love that.
And we're getting it. We're, you know, we're all becoming ballast without realizing it. We're getting it because, you know, we have the ability to leap beyond reason once we stop using our mind. Isn't it an irony? The most intelligent people I know tell me to use my mind less. Well, in my case, that might be an improvement. But really, in the consciousness of us all, we've got to get our minds out of the way so that we can receive intelligence. And I think that may be where the tide is going in the world.
Well, you know, David, actually, I think it's that we have to train our minds. And we have to catch ourselves having negative and bad thoughts, and then we have to train ourselves to replace those thoughts and to, you know, to improve our vibration. Many of the masters, you know, they don't even, they're not even going back in on memory for some of the knowledge that they have. They're tapping into a stream of consciousness. They've learned to train their brain that they can have access to all the knowledge of the world, that it's in a stream of consciousness that they kind of just reach up for and grab. They're not saying, "Oh, well, back in 1978, I read this book about sailing or cooking or this particular spiritual, you know, practice. Let's see, which book was it? And what, let me think. I remember the first part of it, but not the rest." These people can speak so eloquently because they're tapping into a stream of consciousness for whatever situation that they're in. They reach up, they grab that, they use it, they put it back.
Yeah, that's linear thinking.
It is. So it's I don't know, we need our minds. Our minds aren't a bad thing. We need them, but we need to control our mind rather than our mind controlling us.
Well said. Because we are not our minds. Sometimes we'll get inspiration. They might come in through the fourth chakra, but when it does, it goes up into the mind. We process it, and the mind always attributes itself as the author of every idea. Yeah, we have to have our minds, but we sometimes need to remember that our minds are a tool, just as are our other senses when we have our chakras open. And, of course, I'm referring to the major, well, in many beliefs, the major seven energy points within the body, and there's beliefs that say there are more and some that even extend outside of the body. But we really have to integrate them all. That's why medicine is going that way now. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program here. We're speaking with Ann Wilkinson. We're talking about where healing is now and putting a perspective on where it comes from. And you're going to tell us about your sites, are you not? You have handsonhealthde.com. You also have another site at amogalife.com. Can you tell us a little bit about why you have these sites on the web and what their purpose is for your viewers?
Hands on Health used to be the whole comprehensive practice. And then I decided that, you know, I found myself repeating myself a lot to patients, or I would tell them four of the five things I wanted to tell them and remember at 1 o'clock in the morning that I forgot to tell them, you know, to drink plenty of water after they left or to decrease their caffeine or whatever. And I decided that I needed to separate the two. Number one, it's very hard to put into an insurance code when I did, like I said, the soul retrieval, or I'm doing energy work, or so I decided that there needed to be a clear separation. So hands-on health is really an osteopathic medical aspect of my work. You know, I testify in court for patients. I write notes so that their insurance can pay for, you know, their visits. I, you know, help them with their lawsuits. I can't say that that's my favorite aspect of what I do by any means, but there's people suffering, and you know, a lot of people get head injuries and accidents, and they because they have a head injury, they're not speaking to their lawyers and their doctors well, and they're undiscovered, and I discover them, and then I can be an advocate for them. That is all considered kind of the hands-on health medical model. But there's another part of what I do that I just love so much, and I wanted to be able to do a better job of that aspect and have it be my life be more balanced in that part. So Imogo Life is the educational part. It's the retreat part. It's where I can do energy work on my patients. I can take them to the creek and do meditation, treat them on a rock. I can put them on a horse. I can put them in the pool. I can do those things and not have to worry about fitting into the medical model. And then one of the things that I'm doing, like, for instance, tomorrow night I'm teaching a class called Bodies Work, and I taught it in Denver last week, but I taught it to a group of doctors. And I've taught, every time I teach this class, they say, when is it on DVD? When's it coming out? But I'm making a series of videos that are going to be on the Imogo Life website. And my patients, when they come, I'll say to them, your appointment is Monday. You need to get on and watch the Bodies Work video before you come in. And that way, all of those things that I want to tell them, everybody's going to get it. So I'm not going to miss telling somebody something. And give me your questions, we'll talk about them first before I treat you, because then I can treat my patients totally focused and centered, not with a lot of blah, blah, blah. Not allow my patients to go into their head or take me out of my more sensitive states. And then if I find out during the session that the patient has a problem with caffeine or hydration or their acidity or alkalinity, then I can say, you need to watch video number 3 and number 7 before you come back. And or, like, I travel quite a bit. So let's say I'm going to be in Boulder, Colorado once a month. I may treat a patient and say, look, you need to watch exercise video number 12. And I'd like you to do that daily between now and when you see me in a month. And this way, I'll be training physical therapists to do the medical model work. I'll come in and heavy hit and add my esoteric aspect, my almost Essene esoteric type of aspect. I can come in and add that as an adjunct. And it's okay. It's kind of, you know, the whipped cream and the cherry on top, and it doesn't necessarily have to fit into medical coding. And patients will have that, they'll have access to that other aspect, and we don't have to worry about, you know, when we testify in court, how are we going to explain that they did so much better after we did soul retrieval? Like, it just separates the two. Yes. But it also really pumps up the educational aspect so that my patients can be more responsible just because they know better now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Imogo Life, we teach things like, you know, how the body works most effectively, how you prevent having a total knee or having back surgery, or, you know, and then we have classes on homeopathy or how to cook gluten-free or how to eat farm-to-table or how to make a garden. I have a yoga and meditation for the spine class. We have an animal awareness and interaction class. We also have a survival class, which is really fun. We have a young man named Brett Alexis who studied with Tom Brown, if anybody read the book Tracker, and he's taking us out in the woods in all different seasons, and we're identifying plants that we could eat and how to make a shelter, because he said you can go without food and water for days, but if you make a shelter, you could hang on until someone maybe found you if you were to get lost in the woods, or we would know what to eat, or just even to hear, like, certain animal folks say, now that was a so-and-so, and they never yell or holler, there's another animal nearby, or look at this track. There's, you know, it's amazing. We just have had so much fun with that. And again, yes, this is information that you may ever need or not need, but I'm going to tell you it's fun and we're happy and we're having a great time interacting and understanding nature. And just people come back with such a high frequency from these little treks into the woods. We do a woman's circle. So Imogo Life has a bit different of an energy than the hands-on health.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, we're well within to our last 60 seconds here. But, Anne, what you've described and what you've got going on with these two sites, the cases that you've dealt with and used as examples, and the general approach that you have to your practice describes in detail what I've been saying is true for us in general, that we are moving more towards this type of awareness. That's why we're seeing it in health. And I think this illustrates how we're going to see it in more conscious business, more conscious politics, more conscious lifestyle, and how we do everything from form our cities to interact with each other. But, Anne, we're going to have to wrap up here. Anne Wilkinson, talking about healing and her practices on handsonhealingde.com. ImogoLife.com. I'm David Katzmeyer for the Cycles of Change, thanking you for listening and signing out for tonight. Check out her sites and check us out next week. Good night to you all.
Thank you. Thank you.